don't know if you've noticed, but those balancing rocks are all over the place these days, like the ones on the bulletin, but perhaps not as smooth and as even as those. They are all over. When I'm kayaking, you get to see all sorts of different forms and shapes and sizes. And at first, I only saw, you know, those Inukshuks, the symbol of friend and pointing the right direction. But now you see all kinds of things and different forms. Whether they're being officially built on the Ottawa River Parkway, others are also popping up on people's property, and still others appear on the most secluded shores and beaches. I wonder if they're like a sacrament, an outward and visible sign of the inward and spiritual grace of equilibrium that we already possess. Or maybe they're like a prayer, expressing our deep desire and hope for some sense of balance in our lives. Rocks are piled, books are written, counselors and gurus and yoga masters advise that balance is something to be striven for. The idea of balance is very attractive, making sure that everything that's important in our lives receives equal attention all at the same time. Seems to me, however, this goal has lost its focus, its true focus. It shouldn't be an ideal that equal attention to everything in our lives at every moment is indeed even possible, because that's totally unachievable unless it has happened for one of you. But rather, that equal attention to balance over time in our lives is essential to how we live our life in all of its complexities and contextualities. We're very funny, we human beings, because we always want to push the envelope just a little farther. Have any of you ever built a tower of blocks or rocks or playing cards and not tried to add just one more? And have you ever taken on a new project and then not taken on another and another new project, because after all, they're all just small commitments? And what happens every single time when we do that? The tower topples, energy and enthusiasm wane, and we feel overworked and underappreciated. So much for balance. Maintaining any kind of constant balance requires negotiation, renegotiation about what is important in our lives. Assessing regularly and frequently where and how and why commitments have come into a state of imbalance. If one commitment in life is receiving or has received the most focus and concentration for a while, well, what else needs to be brought into focus? Because undoubtedly, we've left something out. Which one needs more attention at this time in our lives? It's exhausting, this strategy of realignment and recalibration. But even more exhausting is the energy it takes to maintain the myth that achieving a balance in all of life, all the time, is even possible. Now, each one of you here should know this, because the church is infamous for piling on commitments and cares at tipping the scales and toppling the balance. Every one of you who's ever been to church knows the story. One of our lovely newcomers comes in the door, and before the end of coffee hour, they're signed up on the roster 6 times. They've become a warden or a greeter. Something has happened. We do it to ourselves. And all the while, we talk about how balance is so very important. And at times, we even excel at laying on the guilt when someone actually says no to another job or project. Over the summer, one of my friends who has recently been ordained called me to vent. This happens fairly often with newly ordained clergy. and sometimes with those of us who have been around a long time as well. But he called and essentially said, this church of ours says that it cares about you and wants you to be well rested, so that as an ordained leader you can be pastoral and present and fit for the demands of the role. Then, when you actually start doing it, everyone wants a piece of you. Every moment of the day, every day of the week. And I feel guilty because I don't say yes to everything. And it seems like the rest of my life is not nearly as important as the church. It's no different. In fact, it's worse for all of you who aren't ordained, because you're not even paid for that. It's your volunteer time, your own life's commitment. We're our own worst enemy. We demand commitments to competing priorities and at the same time expect us all to be healthy, balanced leaders and people. We proclaim a faith that says, come to me, all who are labor and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. And then we expect people and ourselves to do more than we're possibly able to. Why do we expect that in this place of faith where we believe that self-care and respect is so important? Well, I think there's an unspoken theological justification that just as Jesus sacrificed everything and the disciples gave their lives, so we're supposed to as well. But often that perception of self-sacrifice can quickly lead to giving up of ourselves and giving up on ourselves, giving up who we truly are. And it can end up pushing our peripheral vision out to other things instead of the focus of our ministry, which is to be focused on God, faith in God. Faith in God, though, is not denial of self. If that were true, then God becoming human would be a myth completely. No, faith in God, according to Luke, especially as we hear it today, also means faith in our own worth. And our own worth has to be embodied in tending to the core commitments of our lives that are central to who we are. This week's gospel is an intriguing reading and has about 500 sermons in it. But it does offer a critical corrective for our own commitments of ourselves and of our church and our imbalance sometimes in our priorities. The point of Jesus' story isn't to bash the wealthy, and it's not as simple as saying that we have to choose God over money. The gospel and faith aren't that easy, as much as we might want them to be. Jesus is not really calling out the rich. Instead, Jesus is calling out our loyalties, not only to God, but also to that in which in our lives enables us to be who God has called us to be. That is, we're no good to God or anyone else if we're also not good and caring of ourselves. Being good to ourselves is not an act of sacrifice, and self-care doesn't have to be self-serving. Rather, it's an act of salvation. Being and existing in a way that we believe that we're saved the way we are, as the people we are and the choices that we make, and that might give others the hope that they are too. In the parable, the dishonest manager has lost all perspective and all balance of being good to himself or anyone else, which is what happens to us. In those days, there were common practices of the wealthy people handing over their estate to their managers to take care of it for them. And the managers, rather than just receiving their due pay, would charge a large middleman fee. And they were all men then, so I can say that. A large fee. And so this manager undoubtedly has been skimming money off the peasants for a long, long time. He's about to be fired. His boss, the rich man, has figured out that he is not receiving all the money the people are asked for. And this manager is forced in that moment to take a good look at his practices, his priorities. And to give him credit, he actually does it. He looks in the mirror or in the reflecting pool or whatever, the depth of his soul, and his self-assessment shows that he is not strong enough to dig and he's ashamed to beg. He says that about himself. And he realizes that he will soon have nothing left. No job, no money, no respect, no friends, unless he recalibrates and he changes his perspective and he balances his actions. He takes a very bold step. He calls in the people who owe money and asks them how much they owe. And then he takes off a huge amount. 100 jugs of olive oil? Just give me 50. 80 things of wheat? Just, or 100 things a week? Just give me 80. Undoubtedly, that percentage is exactly what he was keeping for himself. And so the landowner will get what he's expecting, and the manager becomes in balance again. In this story, he's saved. His job is saved. He now has friends because they all love him for finally charging him the right amount. And the wealthy man understands that he has re-looked at where he functions and how he functions. So our skewed loyalties, particularly to this wonderful church organization, when we couch it in self-sacrifice, it only ends up communicating to other people that if they don't have the same kind of loyalty to God, will God really see them? Will God really love them or save them? When our loyalties and commitments are out of kilter, it's awfully hard to imagine or have the impulse to make sure that God's loyalty to the poor, the oppressed, the marginalized is believed, let alone acted upon. If we're constantly in state of need because we're not committed to what we need, we're not committed to our own balance over time, how can we possibly offer that hope to anyone else? How can we proclaim a God who listens to those in need, who sees them and finds them, who frees them, who wants to have dinner with them, who became human for them and died for them, rose for them and ascended for them? When we live our lives, if this truth was not true for us, how can we make it true for anyone else? The question of our dedication, our service on the part of God, is not a request to give up all that gives us life, but rather it's an invitation to dedicate ourselves to God, our God, who sees our needs, who sees the complexity of our lives, who does not expect us to have everything balanced in every moment. We have a number of new choir members, and for a couple of them, they've said to me, now is the right time in my life to do this. That means they've actually figured that out. If they'd done it earlier, it wouldn't have worked for them or for us or for the choir or for those who enjoy the music. It's important for us to understand that it's all right to be balanced in some things now and not other things. Balance, peace, salvation, our true selves are found in serving not the God of money or the God of overwork or the God of overcommitment or the God of guilt for not doing everything. Balance, life, peace, salvation, our true selves are found in the God who sees us and encourages us to look at ourselves and find out, what are your commitments? What are your real needs? How can I be good to myself and serve God and others? Because if we do that, we give hope to others and new life to others, where balance is both a sacrament and a prayer, and a lot more than a pile of rocks that might fall over. Amen.